Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's time now for Namaste Nutrition with Claudia Cleary. Be happy, be healthy, be complete in body, mind, spirit. Claudia's advice is always uplifting and inspirational. Get joyfully motivated every week with Namaste Nutrition. And now, here's Claudia.
Good afternoon. This is Claudia Cleary, and this is Blog Talk Radio, www.blogtalkradio.com/GGM. I am so happy to be back. We were out of town last week and so therefore could not be on the radio, and I apologize to anybody who was trying to listen in and was a little confused about the change in schedule. So consider this my most sincere apologies, and we will move forward in 2013 with some wonderful guests, amazing insight, and some hopefully some nutritional ideas that will inspire and motivate you to move towards a healthier place in your life. Before we begin and continue to go further, I just would like to point out that we are still running some specials on www.shop.com/Claudia Cleary. If you go on there, you will find under health and nutrition some wonderful collections of different supplements that combined together will yield you some really amazing savings. So if there's something that you're really interested in, whether it's general health, stress reduction, optimizing your wellness, anything that is of interest to you, please feel free to contact me at claudia.cleary@yahoo.com. I would be happy to answer your emails if you have nutritional questions. So let's move a little bit forward now from that and go towards who we have with us today as our guest. I have with me, I'm so totally tickled and thrilled to have Nancy Murdoch on the air with us today. She is a Renaissance woman, from what I can tell, from what I've seen on her bio. She's quite remarkable. She has done a great deal of things starting out when she was a child. She was very interested in photography and art, and she grew up in a Motown era during racial riots, busing, political assassinations, the Beatles, all kinds of things that happened during the late 60s, early 70s. And she really has a humanitarian purpose in her life, and so she has combined a whole variety of different interests into a very interesting, cohesive combination to help people maximize their health, their wellness, their life through her art, through her photography, and through her own personal experiences. So without any further ado, Nancy, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Claudia. It's so nice to be here.
It is such a pleasure having you here. How is everything going? Did you have a nice New Year?
I had a lovely New Year, yes. Yes, it was just wonderful, and it's snowing here. Just great, yeah. Yeah, sit by
where
the fire. I'm in Canada. So
you're in Canada.
So there's snow here.
I'm not surprised. There's snow where I am too, which is unusual this time of the year, but still it's all good. So talk a little bit about something of your history and your experiences as a young person and how it's evolved and changed you and how it's allowed you to help other people.
Well, what would you like to know exactly?
Well, let's talk a little bit about your art and how that sort of has blossomed into what you're currently doing. Just a little brief bio in your own words. I mean, I went onto your website, which is absolutely amazing. I have to tell people that because I heard your bio on your website. So if you can, just tell people your bio, just tell them your website if they'd like to have some more information, and then we can go into something specific if you'd like from there.
Sure. I actually have two websites, the one with my art and my jewelry. That's my name, nancymurdoch.com. And then there's the one that I launched today, or just a few days ago, which is how do I get out of this rut.com. So I use that website to, it's a website and a blog. to help women who are suffering from depression to become vibrantly alive and enthusiastic about life again. And my art, my passion, I have a lot of things that I'm passionate about in life. Art is really my form of meditation, and it's my form of growing and experimenting. Whenever I sit down to do a piece of art, I have no idea what I'm going to do. I usually I used to call them inner landscapes. Now I don't call them anything. But I would sit down with everything around me, and I just start. I just do something. And if I had an idea of what I wanted to do in the beginning, it didn't turn out like that. It would just, I would let the spirit just take over, you know, just the inner guidance, guidance from above. So it's not like I was doing it. I mean, part of me was involved, and it was just I was just really in the zone, you know, in the space. And I never actually sit down to create something that I may hang on the wall. My art is really just about, where can I push my edges? What can I try that will be different? What can I include in here that will really move this piece, that can be, you know, really dynamic? And I usually only do art when I'm in a good mood, even though if I was in a bad mood, it puts me in a good mood. There was one painting that I did. It was the only painting that I've ever done where I sat down in a really bad mood. I had had a renter. Sometimes I rent rooms out, and I had a renter that he just left in a really bad way. I was just really upset about it all, and I did all my usual clearings and everything, and it just, you know, my own anger wouldn't go away. So I said, just go and start painting something, just see what happens. So I started pouring some paint on the page on a board. It was actually a board, and I put it out in the rain, and I let it get all washed off, and I brought it in, and I put some more on it, and actually it turned into a really, you know, by the time I was halfway done, I was feeling different, because I'm moved into that art space, which is what clears all our anger anyway, and I wasn't really paying attention to this. I was just really focused on the piece. And it's called Corpse Bride. It was actually done from my daughter had one year had been Corpse Bride for Halloween, and I loved the photo. So it was dark, but yet there is so much beauty in it. She's just in this wedding gown, and it's a beautiful painting. But it's the only one I've ever done when I've been angry. But it just shows you how art can actually take you into that heart-centered space and heal the emotions that you're experiencing.
Oh, yeah. I think that's probably part of the reason why some people choose to go into art therapy, is because it shifts how you're perceiving the world around you as well as how you're perceiving yourself. And it sounds like you do that too. You use it as a meditation, but it's so therapeutic for so many people, even if they don't necessarily have a burning issue or a critical illness. It really does change how you perceive everything. And that's fantastic. And I'm sorry about the renter, but I understand that stuff like that happens.
Well, that was okay, too. I mean, the challenge was, okay, get stronger. You know, set more boundaries. And that's what I did. But I wasn't able to do that when I was in that space of anger and stress. You know, you can only really do that once you get clear and heart-centered. I've used art in workshops before, too. There's a retreat center that's rather local. It's not too close to me, but it was a beautiful place. It was a log cabin out in the middle of the woods, and it had a stream running by it. And there was about 12 of us that gathered for a day. I'd been thinking. A woman invited me. She saw my art at an art show, and she wanted me to come and just do something, something there. And I thought, sounds like a great opportunity. And I wanted to put together a program for people who could be anybody. You could either have experience in art or never touched a paintbrush or a crayon or pencil ever in your life. And I thought, okay, I want to do something for everybody. How can I do that? And when I came up with an idea, and wow, it was amazing that people just, they used this. We did three exercises. I provided all the materials and whatnot. And, you know, we started out the day with a little bit of yoga to get into your body and mm-hmm. some meditation to get into the heart space and clear all the stuff that people had come in with. And then we moved into the three exercises, which was who do you want to be in your public life? And this was what people had been holding back, and so they needed to express it on huge, huge pieces of paper that everybody joined in on. And then we had them draw on their own individual papers who they wanted to be in their private life. This was parts that they'd kept inside themselves. And I had invited people to bring any kind of poetry or writing, photos, anything they wanted to collage into it. So it was paintings and drawings and collages and whatnot. And then the final exercise was we took pieces of each of those and tore them up and put them onto who they wanted to be, like they had a board each, who they wanted to be in their sacred life, like what were they holding back. And Natalia, Claudia, afterwards, it was just amazing. A lot of these people were health practitioners or counselors, school counselors. They had been holding a lot of stuff, a lot of pain, and they all released it through their art. They all had amazing transformations. It's like they had permission when they were doing their art to actually let go of it all.
It's sometimes, I think, a real challenge when you go into a healing session to let go of your stuff and to move
yeah.
forward from it. Because I think half the reason why people end up going into those areas is because of their own issues, their own feelings. And they don't sometimes they don't even know what they're trying to feel until it starts to come up in a situation like yours. Very profound. Really cool.
Yeah.
It sounds like you have implemented a great deal about metaphysics into what you do. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. Can you just speak up just a tiny bit? It's hard, just a little hard to hear you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Is that better?
Wonderful, yeah.
Okay.
So you wanted to talk about meditation?
Yeah, no, metaphysics. You said that
metaphysics.
Your spiritual practices have sort of shaped how you have implemented a variety of different things in your life. So I'd like to see how that's impacted you and how it's guided you to pursue some of the interests that you have and at the same time how it's helped those people that have come in contact with you.
Yes. Well, spirituality has just been a really big part of my being. I mean, I think it was just a natural sense that I was born with. I've always been attracted to it. I've always been a spiritual person. And I don't know, can we really even define spirituality? Maybe, I guess that means different things to different people. For me, I guess it means just living my ultimate best, living my authentic self. And, I can't say there was ever a time that it started because it's always been there. But I can say that some of the challenges that I've had in it have really shaped me in my direction to get stronger, I guess I could say, because I'm an extremely empathic person, and I don't know when that really started or when I became aware of it, but I know that it really affected me after I had children. So who knows, maybe something shifted there. And by empathic, I meant I really feel people's emotions, and they come inside me as if they're my own. And I've had some very, very difficult. Well, the way I can explain it is, have you ever seen the movie The Exorcism of Emily Rose?
Oh, Audrey Rose?
No, The Exorcism of Emily Rose, I think it is.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that one. There was a movie back a long time ago called Audrey Rose, and it was about reincarnation, but maybe we're thinking of two totally different movies. But I'm not familiar with the one you're talking about.
Yes, this was the one where the woman was had, for lack of a better way to say it, psychic attacks. She actually did have the psychic attacks. I wouldn't call mine that. I was just really empathic, and I can feel people. But it turned out that same way. You know, I would be sitting here with my daughters at lunchtime. We're having a great, great time laughing. And then all of a sudden I'd start crying and I could feel it. And it took me years actually to know the difference between what was mine and what wasn't mine, or that, because I would always think, oh my gosh, what's wrong with me? Why is this happening? I'm happy. Because we always learn that everything that you're feeling is yours, but in a way it's true, but in a way it's not true. I mean, there are energies that are all over us. I mean, we're not really solid beings, are we? You know, we're just energetic beings. So when we're not in that total heart-centered space, or
I think I understand what you're saying. I know what you're saying, and it's tough to sort of explain it, but I do get it. It's difficult to recognize that fine line between your emotions and what's coming through from someone else. And it could be somebody that's close to you that lives really far away. It could be somebody near you who is not necessarily close to you, but just has a lot of energetic issues that are popping up, and all of a sudden it's bleeding off and you're tapping into it. And as an intuitive, it's really tough sometimes, especially when your focus is empathy, to be able to figure out where you stop and where someone else begins, so that you can put up those boundaries and prevent that from bleeding in and affecting your life in a negative way.
Yes.
If it's any consolation, I have the same problem. And I'm trying to set those boundaries myself around me, too, because it's a real challenge when you start picking up on other people's emotions. If I'm around people who are really happy, oh, boy, do I get really happy. And it's the same thing. When I'm around people who are really sad, I start radiating it, and I just become a beacon for it, and it just comes right through me. And so
yes. It's
a similar issue. And, I mean, if you think back to what it was like for you as a child, I'm just curious. You said that it sort of manifested more when you had children. But did you notice a period of time in your life when you were young where you started to have bouts of tears when you were really little? Or did you notice that you'd start giggling at inappropriate times? It might have ended up manifesting earlier, but you might never have really tapped into it. And for anybody who's listening, it could be something very similar.
Yes, absolutely. And if I looked back, there could have been those times, but I don't really remember. In my younger years, I was really focused on, well, music and sports. I did a lot of swimming, and I played flute. I played in bands and symphonies, and so I was really focused on, I had a focus, and maybe that's a bit of a difference. I don't know. You know, I just really was, you know, I would practice my flute for 8 hours a day. I drove my whole system, but I'd still do it. And then I'd swim, and I was always exercising. So I can't really say, but I know that that's the truth, that if, you know, all of a sudden you start crying and you think, whoa, what's wrong with me? It's me. But so I think it's really important for children to understand the different energies in the world and how that can affect them. And I know my daughter, I know she has some kind of psychic ability. She won't, she doesn't want to address them. Neither of my daughters do at this point. But she'd come home from high school and say, you know, Mom, whatever, Mr. So-and-so, the history teacher or the sociology teacher, she'd say, I could see him. He knew exactly what was going on in everybody's mind. I watched him. I listened to what he was saying. And, you know, so she knew that she had some kind of thing going on with him. She'd actually project some stuff to him. And yeah, so I know that her teacher was psychic, and I wanted her to talk to him about it, or just, you know, but they're all so silent. And she was in some plays and local theater guild plays, and there was a time there where the kids would get together and they'd talk about seeing auras. So this was something that was sort of like a hush-hush thing, you know. They didn't want anybody to know, but when they found out that somebody else saw auras, it's like, oh, wow, what do we do about this? So there needs to be some education along this line. And they, you know, they spoke about ghosts as well. They would see, different kids would see figures and in their homes or different places, and it's still not brought out in the open enough. You know, people are thinking, oh, yeah, you're crazy. We don't want to talk about that. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, I don't know what, you know, I encourage them to talk about it, and I don't know if that helped or not. But
I think each child has to come to their own acceptance of whatever their skill sets are. And I think one of the biggest difficulties is recognizing that kids who have a mind that doesn't work in a traditional linear fashion mainstream America, those kids tend to be shunted off to the side. And I've said this before, and I'll be happy to say it again, it's got to change. Our educational system has to change. And so if there are any educators out there who are listening, and you know that there are skill sets kids have that they come in with and they're confused about them, there's got to be some way of bringing them some knowledge so that they don't think that they are losing their minds and that they're not insane, that they actually are normal, and that they do have similar skill sets as other people do. It's just that if they don't have the language to express it, it's hard for them to feel like they're validated, and it's hard for them to feel like they're that they're normal. And there's nothing abnormal about what they do. It's just that they have some abilities that, if manifested and if nurtured, it will end up, you know, coming more to the forefront. But, yeah, I understand exactly what you're talking about. It's tapping into a more primal area of the human brain and learning exactly what we're able to do. I mean, I think animals do it all the time, instinctively, you know, being clairvoyant.
Yeah.
And so going back to some of the questions that we were discussing before, you wrote a couple of books. I'd like very much to hear about what motivated you to write those books and something about what they are, what the topics you've written on.
Well, the first book I wrote is called To All the Men Who Made Me Cry, Thank You. And you know what? I sat down and I wrote this one straight through. I mean, yeah, I went to bed and I ate and whatnot, but I would get up and I'd write it. I was full. It was just, I just poured it all out. And it's really about, it's my spiritual growth. It's my coming into self-actualization, kind of like Eat, Love, Pray, but I think I wrote it before that. And it's just, it's my experiences, you know, from thinking, kind of like from, I guess, slightly feeling victimized, even though mentally, you know, that my knowledge, I knew that I wasn't a victim, all that, but in my body and in my own sense of self, I felt it. So this was really an awakening for me, and, you know, I go through all the different men who have been in my life, whether they've been personal relationships or business partners or whatnot, and how I was, I could say it this way now, but how I was hurt by them. I mean, it's not that they necessarily hurt me. It's who they were and what I was bringing to the relationship, you know, and I how I really grew from that, how each one of the men showed me a mirror of myself. And when I saw that, that gave me the opportunity to change it. You know, I saw how somebody was treating me, and I didn't see myself back then as being limitless or important or beautiful or significant. I actually just pretty much disappeared my own needs and desires in relationships, and it was the wounded parts of myself that were mirrored back to me in the way men treated me. So this book is really a good book for women. Well, it's good for men too, but, you know, I think women can really identify with the lessons I learned, the experiences I went through. A lot of them were really exciting. I mean, I talk about my ghosts and my, you know, my kind of my psychic awakenings in the book as well. Yeah, so that's what it's about. And the other
book, no woman out there could ever possibly relate to that at all, right?
Oh, no woman's ever been.
No women's ever been subsumed by her, you know, by a man's desires. Let's get real here. I think a majority of women out there are able to relate to a story like that, because what woman out there hasn't at one point or another ignored her own instincts and ignored her own wishes and goals and dreams in order to help please a man? And I think that this is a very empowering thing for a lot of women. And one of the most challenging things, I think, is teaching young women, especially, how to recognize that fine line once again between, you know, recognizing where you need to go and what you need to do for yourself, as well as trying to work together in a relationship in order to make sure that everybody is in a balanced state of interdependence. It's just very, very challenging sometimes to be able to do that. So this is a very, very important book to have out there. And you're right, Eat, Pray, Love did come out there, made a big splash, etc. But if this predates it, it would be a really good follow-up for people who have read Eat, Pray, Love to just read it and see exactly how, from a more deeper spiritual perspective, you could end up learning some more and moving forward in your life.
Yeah.
So you wrote another book too.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you a little more about this one. It's so real.
Oh, go right
ahead. I mean, I didn't hold anything back. I didn't write for anybody. I just wrote it because I needed to write it. So I said everything I needed to say. You know, it's not like it's you know, the bad parts are edited out kind of thing. No, it's like, okay, this is what happened. I just bared my soul. It's really a book where I totally bared my soul. And
so it's
actually
pretty
on
raw.
My website, there's the first chapter. Is you can download it for free, and I think I did the an audio of the introduction. So if anybody wanted to listen to that, they can too. Yeah, it's out there, and I think I started it in a very angry place, but I used humor. You know, and I think everybody can kind of relate to that. You've just felt the pain. You wanted to say these things to these guys, but then the turnaround is, you know, what did I learn from it? So that's the part that's really going to help women. And men, you know, men can really read this book too and go, wow, is that what we do? You know?
Yeah, I think the sensitive men out there who actually do understand that what they're trying to do in a relationship might not be the best thing can read a book like this and recognize that they need to change how they're expressing themselves, what they expect, and how to find that delicate place where they can end up achieving their goals. As well as making sure that their women in their lives achieve theirs at the same time, instead of thinking that achievement of their own goals ends up meaning that they have to suppress a woman. It doesn't have to be that way. And I think it's critical for people to recognize that. And that's part of a spiritual awakening and a spiritual need that we all have. And, you know, that's something, you know, that interconnectedness, but at the same time a healthy kind of an interconnectedness with other people. Yeah, really powerful stuff. I'm going to get a hold of your book and read it myself, too. I can't wait. It's going to be added to the stack that's slowly growing next to my bed of all
Great.
These books that I have to get through.
And, you know, there's one important thing about that, too, is that we think we don't have another choice. You know, like, he's the only one out there. If I don't have him, for whatever reason it is, then I'm not going to have love or whatever the situation is. I remember this is one really big growth thing I made is there was, you know, I have done a lot of websites over the years, and I'm not an HTML person, and it was difficult. So I would always, I'd have to do my website late at night when the techie guys were on the support forums, and I would write and get answers, and then sometimes the odd person would be willing to talk to me on the phone because it's a lot easier. They think you're techie and that they put, you know, it's just easier on the phone. But when they'd call, some of these guys would be so nasty to me, like really put down. And I accepted it, thinking, well, if I don't accept it and I just, you know, just play along with them, then I won't get help and my issue won't get resolved. So this kind of goes across the board in all things. We think that if we don't play ourselves down to the man, that whatever we want isn't going to get answered. Which is basically saying I don't have the strength inside myself.
Right. Well, it's also just a question of recognizing that everybody has a mind that works in a specific direction. And when you have people who are more left-brained, they can take a look at stuff that a right-brained artistic person will look at and go, oh, my God, this is Greek to me, and say, well, why don't you get this? And act really, really dismissive of women when they do that, or of men if they're more artistically oriented. I mean, I go back to when I was in college and I was trying to get through chemistry, and the chemistry book that we were going through was horrible. It was so badly written, I didn't understand anything. And I remember reading a chapter about 5 times, and I didn't get it the 5th time any more than I'd gotten it the 1st. And when I went to talk to the professor about it, he was just very dismissive. And he said, I used to open up textbooks like this and play with them when I was in 9th grade. I'm like, that's great. I could run rings around you about Shakespeare. He didn't understand what I was saying. But the point that I think people have to understand is that just because you don't think or understand something in a very specific way does not mean that you're stupid. It simply means that your mind works in a specific way, and somebody who's more technical they're more linear. They're more progressive in terms of, you know, one progression after another, and they're more left-brain oriented. And it doesn't make them any better or worse. It just means that they're different. But putting people down for thinking differently than you do sort of misses the whole boat. We all have different ways of thinking and doing, and all ways of thinking and doing things are valid.
Yeah, and it doesn't even mean that you don't get it ever. It could just be a timing thing, some kind of a growth thing, because I remember in junior high, I sure didn't get algebra. Oh, man, that was horrible. And then when I homeschooled my girls, we had a better book, and I went through it, and it's like, oh, wow, I love this. I get it now. You know, so that was many years later. So, you know, our growth all takes place at different times in our lives.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And I think that when more left-brain thinkers understand a more artistic way and try to bring how they're explaining something more into an artistic way, it's going to make things easier for everybody to understand. It's really good that there are people who are writing textbooks out there that actually are understood better by more artistic thinkers. But and it's just really great. You know, I mean, when you end up talking to some of these techie people now, are they still really inappropriately rude to you, or do they actually behave themselves?
You know, I've watched for that, and it's not that they've changed. I notice what they're doing, and I go, okay, that doesn't work for me. I'm done with you. I mean, that's what's going on in my head. I end up being polite about it and saying, I'm sorry, I'm going to hire somebody else. You know, but that's where I'm at. I don't think, oh, no, he's the only one that can ever do this for me. I better, you know, knuckle down and listen, take his abuse. No, that just doesn't happen to me anymore. Yeah,
I think
so
that as we get older,
the people will necessarily change.
Mm-hmm.
But I am attracted. I love techie guys. I really do. I think they're the greatest in the world.
They are fun. Yeah, they really are fun.
For some reason, I attracted the ones that that were the lessons I needed to learn to get stronger in myself.
Yeah. It's a really challenging lesson, I think, for a lot of women to recognize that we have to stand up because we do have a voice and our voice counts. But we have to acknowledge that. We can't wait for other people to acknowledge that. It's an inside job. And so,
I'd love to tell you just a brief little story about when I actually had to stand up and speak for myself. This is when I was, I was in my early 20s. I might have been even 21 or 22, and I had my photography business, and I did photographed weddings. Mm-hmm. And I was in a church. And it was back before digital. So I had my lights all set up, and they were on slaves. And I had the wedding party. And, you know, you really have a limited amount of time when you're doing wedding photography. Everybody wants to get on with what they've done, get on to the party and be done with all the photos. So you really, you know, you have to be really fast and good at getting them to smile and you know, move on. So I had the whole party all set up in the front of the church, and I was getting ready to take some pictures, and then all the what do you call them, the guests, they would all start flashing their cameras off, and that would set off my slaves. So then my lights had to take a few moments to recharge again, then they'd all flash them off again. So I thought, okay, the bride is paying me to do pictures of her. Not that I had no problem with other people taking photos. It wasn't about the money thing. It was about I needed to give her some really good professional shots. Mm-hmm. So I had to actually stand up there and address the whole congregation, say, you need to please, will you please wait until I'm finished taking these photos before you can snap them, because they're setting off my slaves. And I said, I'll set up a gorgeous pose for you, and you can take all you want afterwards. Well, wow, I saw that they were grumbling to themselves, like, oh, what you doing? You know, nobody was thinking bride and groom here. They paid for me to do this. They want good shots. But, you know, I had to really take a stand and actually stand up there and do it. And they did hold off, even though they were grumbling about it. And then I set them up and, you know, moved on. But that was a turning point in my life, for actually getting up in front of a large group of people speaking what needed to be said. Stand there for me and for them, for the bride.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's important, I think, you know, to recognize where a boundary has to be set and to say, you know what, this is my gig. I mean, I could think back to times when I was in high school and as a young adult myself where I should have probably set a boundary and I didn't. Or, you know, where I did set a boundary and I was very pleased that I did because somebody was stepping on my toes. It's a learning process, I think, for women to recognize where, as an artist, you know, an artistic mindset where people are sort of running over what we're trying to do and setting appropriate boundaries and saying to people, you know what, no, this isn't working. And it's not that you're a bad person. It's that what you did or didn't do isn't working for me because there needs to be a specific goal accomplished that I'm trying to do. And what you did was great, you know, and I think that this is, once again, another great lesson for a lot of people out there, too. So let's go on just a little bit, Nancy. The other book that you have written, talk a little bit about that, if you don't mind. Hello? Okay. It sounds like Nancy might have gotten knocked off of the system. So if she comes back in, we'll be able to pick up where she was. But I would like to say that she has been very, very interesting and has written a bunch of different articles and does a great deal of blogs. I hope that she comes back on very soon because I'd like very much to have you listen to what she has to say. But at this point, oh, Nancy, are you back?
Yeah, I'm on. My phone for some reason cut right out.
Oh, that's
I'm on a calling card, so it just cut out and said, yeah, call again.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you're back on. So what I was asking you was if you would talk a little bit about your other book when you have a second and talk about how it's helped people.
Okay, yes. My other book is called It's Mostly About Sex and the Pleasures of Pleasing a Woman. And this one was specifically written to men and specifically to the men on my newsletter list because they often wrote to me or called and talked to me, chatted, whatever it was, about relationships and how they were unhappy in relationships and how they actually thought that being better in bed was going to either land them that woman or make their relationships better. So this is really a book about self-awareness for men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
That's interesting. And what I do is
a little bit based on chakras, really. They're really in their first and second chakra area, and I move them up into the heart. I take it from being all about sex to being about love and how they can have a better relationship with themselves first and then with a woman and how they really need to show up for the relationship. So that's really what that book is about. It's specific. And, you know, the funny thing is, I wrote it for the men on my list who were looking for better relationships, but the men that buy it are usually married men. And it's always surprised me, but then I think, well, okay, these are married men and they're in good relationships because I knew a lot of them. Why are they buying it? But maybe that's why, because men who are in good relationships want to keep their relationships healthy and strong, so maybe they're the ones that are buying some self-help books.
I think that's critically important, and it's nice to hear that there are more married men out there, as well as the single ones, too, who are recognizing something's not working and shifting things so that they can make it work better for the women in their lives. It's really good, and it's interesting, too. So if there's anybody who is listening who is interested in this, yeah, you can go to Nancy's website. Where can people go to order these books if they're interested in ordering them, Nancy?
Well, the first one I have, the To All the Men Who Made Me Cry, Thank You, is on my new website, howdoigetoutofthisrut.com. And the other book is on its own website. It's called itsmostlyaboutsex.com. And that one's in audio format, too. And it's interesting that all the men who have read it have said that it's really opened their eyes. So that's good. It's a good confirmation.
Well, that's
that,
such great feedback.
Yeah. Yeah, that it's helping. And that's really why I'm writing it, these books. Mm-hmm. It's really just to help people, to give them a clearer understanding of who they are, their own self-awareness, help them to get deeper inside themselves, and help them connect to love. You know, real love, that authentic, lasting kind of love, which I think we all want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no arguments from me. I understand completely. We are right now, I just want to give a station ID right now. This is www.blogtalkradio.com/GGM. And I am Claudia Cleary. This is Namaste Nutrition. So talking a little bit about nutrition, there is something in your history that is very interesting to me personally because I've touched on it a little bit in my studies, but I'm interested in finding out how you have implemented it into your
coaching sessions and how you've helped people with this too, and that's Ayurveda, which is something that I know a little bit about, and I'm sure you know a little bit more about it. So if you'd like to talk a little bit about Ayurveda, what it is, and talk a little bit about what you know about it. Just let's start with, what is Ayurveda?
Yes, it's I love Ayurveda. Ayurveda is, actually the word means science of life, and it's a holistic system of medicine and healing that's been practiced in India for more than 5,000 years. It's obviously, it's over in Canada and North America as well. It's all over the world now, obviously. And it's a way of eating and living that is entirely based in nature. It's Ayurveda is like a maintenance manual for the body. It gives us guidelines for how to take care of our body and our mind and our spirit. And it's the only health science to date that works with our uniqueness and our individualness. So, and it's based on the rhythms of nature, because the rhythms of nature are the same as our bodies, or our body rhythms are basically the same as nature. And it's always moving towards healing. So I was drawn to Ayurveda. It was really an intuitive kind of thing. I didn't really know anything about it. I'd heard the word. I'd never done any study on it. But I love learning new things, and I'm always reaching for that one simple answer to higher states of happiness and excellent health for everyone. I know there is something out there, and I wanted to know what it was. So I'm always experimenting, and I thought, yeah, okay, I'll just take this class. It was an intensive course, and see what it's all about. And initially, like, I go to the Art of Living ashram outside of Montreal a couple times a year, and I take silence courses, yoga, meditation. I usually go when the guru's there. He's Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, the spiritual leader. Are you familiar with him, Claudia?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look more into it.
He's wonderful, and he supports the Ayurveda. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go try this out. And, you know, I was first drawn, I'm on their newsletter, so they send me information, and they send upcoming courses. And the one course that I was going to do was being a practitioner of Ayurveda, which meant doing their different massages. They have a different set of massages and body practices than your traditional certified massage therapists do. And I was really drawn to that because I've had those kind of massages before. Mm-hmm. They're just amazing. But then I kept thinking, yeah, I like receiving massages. I don't really want to have a practice of giving them. Not that I don't mind giving them. I mean, I've done the body work before, but I was looking for something else. So I thought, okay, cooking. All right, let's go do that. Let's see what that's all about. So I went there, and it was an intensive course. And, you know, what I really, it's not a diet. You know, Ayurveda is not a diet. It's a complete system of life. What I like about it is that it's a roadmap for perfect health and emotional well-being and spiritual connection that doesn't change. I can change, as people do, but it doesn't change because it's based on the five elements. Earth, air, well, let's start at the bottom. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So the food that we eat is a combination of all of those things. Our bodies are a combination of all of those elements. So when you know what your body tendency is, you can choose the appropriate kinds of food just by knowing that. I'll give you an example. Salads. Salads are grown usually above the ground, like lettuce and tomatoes and that kind of thing. So they're more made up of air and space than they are of something like root vegetables, which are underneath the ground. They're made up of the earth and the water. So a salad, air element, when you're flying or traveling, you know, you're in the air, you're also feeling kind of spacey. So the idea is to bring balance to your body. So if you've been traveling, it's not the best choice to have a salad. when you land or when you're in the air, because that's going to keep you kind of in that the spacey.
Into the spaciness, yes.
Yeah. So the best thing to do, so if you know these things, so okay, so you have some kind of root vegetable or something heavy, even sweets, not sugars. We don't, you know, talk about, we don't have really sugars. It's like heavy things will pull you back down to the ground. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Yeah, so it's really
a
balance of the elements in your foods and in your body. So you need to know where your body is. So then what kind of foods you would eat to bring that back into balance. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, you have a question here that I just want to touch on, just because, like I said, I know a little bit about Ayurveda. I don't know too much about it. But it's about doshas, and I'll let you talk in more detail about that. But I just know that my dosha, I'm a pitta. Forget it.
Oh, are you?
I can't eat spicy foods to save my life. I don't like breathing fire when I eat my food. But it will set my entire stomach and digestive system totally off. Forget it. I can do a little bit of spicy, just a little tiny bit. More than that, forget it. My stomach will complain for hours. Not a pretty picture.
So then you know how this affects us, right?
But you see, not everybody who has a pitta dosha is going to have that effect if their dosha is a secondary. You could talk a little bit more about this, like I said, but if their secondary is a pitta, they might be able to do more spicy foods. But I can't. And I just know that about myself because I've tried it. It doesn't work for me.
And that's good to notice. We need to notice what we're eating and how it's affecting us. So just briefly, doshas are just body constitutions, basically. They're, in a way, they're an imbalance. We're always imbalanced, but we just bring them back into balance with the different things we do, the lifestyles and the foods we eat. So it's really just a body constitution. And there are three kinds. Vata is made up of air and space. And pitta, like you are, is fire and just a little bit of water. And then there's kapha, which is made up of mostly earth and water. So that means that pitta is fire, and mostly fire, just a little bit of water in there. So if you're a pitta person, or you have a pitta constitution, that means that you should really go light. That means you've got fire, right? You've already got fire in you. You've got that, the digestive element that really burns things. So if you have spicy foods, it's going to upset your balance. You need things you need cooling things, you know, foods that would cool that fire down a little. And the way to play with this is by noticing your mood. If you're a pitta person, personality, and you have a lot of fiery, hot, spicy foods, you might get angry, you know, because you really created extra fire. Your fire is out of balance. So you could be angry. You could be resentful. You could be aggressive. This is usually what happens. You know, we all have a little bit of, we all have all three doshas. It just depends on how much of each you have in your particular body constitution. And actually a balance of pretty much even between the pitta and the vata. But also we have, we can be out of balance in there. So my normal constitution is a pitta, which is a fire, and then the vata, which is air and space. Which is a lot of, it's air and space, that means we have movement in our life. So, I'm out of balance. It's really reversed for me. So I have a little bit too much vata right now. I need to take that off. And actually, if anybody is interested in learning what your constitution or your dosha is, or how to eat properly in Ayurveda, the best way to do it is to have an Ayurveda doctor read your pulse. They can tell you exactly what you are and what's out of balance, and then you can take it from there and you choose the proper foods, lifestyles, and that kind of thing. Or you can actually try an online test. There's lots of them, so you can get a general idea, but you'll never know for sure unless you actually have a licensed Ayurveda practitioner do it for you. So Yeah, so it really can. So if my vata, which is air and space, if I'm, you know, really a little bit out of air and space, which means I'm kind of floating, you know, in that dreamy state, to bring myself back into balance, I need to eat something heavy, right? I need to get grounded. And then the opposite.
You do better if you're not gaining, if you end up eating something with a little bit of healthy oils in it, some vegetables, maybe root vegetables, and lighter proteins, perhaps, maybe. Well, maybe you could do chicken. I don't know, because I know that Ayurveda really focuses mostly on vegetables rather than on meat. Is that true?
Right. Yeah, the meat is not. See, there's the foods. The best thing to know about Ayurveda, that if anybody wanted to take away today, is that there's three qualities of foods.
Mm-hmm.
Sattva is the quality of light, love, and the qualities of foods are also qualities of our emotions and our spiritual force and that kind of thing. So it's the pure, it's the good, it's the honesty, it's the self-control, it's the faith. They're the wholesome foods. They're the fresh ones, the fresh fruits and vegetables and nuts and that kind of thing. So those seeds, some honey, those are the things that when you eat more of that, you become more of that. So you become lighter. You become more love. You become your spirituality increases. It can't help but do that because that's what you're feeding your body. And then there's the rajas, which is in the middle there. It's really about a lot of movement. It's if you eat foods like that, I'll explain them. They're often hot and bitter. They're sour, salty. It affects your mind-body balance. They're fish, chocolate, onions, garlic, fast foods, coffee, that kind of thing. If you have that, you're going to have a lot of agitation in your moods and in your body. You're going to fluctuate. You know, you're just going to always be kind of on edge and ready to usually to move into the fight flight, like into the aggressive state there.
Mm-hmm.
And the tamas food is a dark quality. It's very negative. So the more food that you eat, that it brings you down. It's about ignorance and attachment and dullness and heaviness and stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
And these foods are really, they have no prana. They have no vital life force in them. It's generally microwaved, frozen, leftovers, processed food. So we already know this, but now knowing, I mean, we know that that kind of food isn't good for us, right? But now we know why. And now we know what it's going to do to our body. And it's not that you can never have it. There might be a time where you are just flying so high that you really need to get a little bit of heaviness in your body, right? I mean, before bed at night, you might want to have something that'll sort of weigh you down so that you can sleep, so that you can just, you know, calm the mind a little bit. So it's not that one is good or bad. It's just knowing the difference and when to eat them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's a time and a place for each kind of food, and if you can focus the majority of it on the healthier choices,
That's
great. But if you're out of balance, you need the others in order to help bring you back into a center place. And It makes total sense. I mean, I guess my question to you then would be, what do you like best about Ayurveda as far as how it's impacted your life?
I like it because it's my roadmap. I can now know, because I know my constitution, I can know what I'm eating and what it's going to do for me, and then I'm in the driver's seat to either choose that or not to choose that. It's not like my life is now out of control because, you know, why eat all this fast food and, you know, I'm feeling so heavy and I didn't know why. I know now if I choose something like French fries, I know what it's going to do for me, you know, and I can balance. And I can also, it's not just that, it's like for your jobs, for everything. I know that if I'm going to eat something fresh, that I'm going to have a fresher attitude. I'm going to feel lighter. I'm going to feel happier and joyful. So it's really the foods really affect our moods. And when I help women with depression, you know, we have to really get out of eating those heavy foods that keep us in the downward cycle. So I like it because it's a roadmap that's not changing. You know, mm-hmm. I can change, but I've still got my roadmap, and I know what to choose. It's like, I know the answer. That's it. It's like, okay, this is the answer.
It's
so I'm happy about that. It can actually, they have a lot of remedies, a lot of antidotes too. So if you do have some sugar, you know, if you just have some cardamom afterwards, it helps. It's an antidote for sugar. That's not encouraging you to eat sugar. It's just saying that there is an antidote for everything. So you can still balance. And it's about spices. I love spices. It's just, it's the roadmap, Claudia. I like knowing that it's based on the elements. It's just so real, and it's not going to change. Yeah.
I think that's critically important to remember, because too often people think that once you end up working through a diet, say because of one health issue or another, or weight or whatever, that you can end up then going back to the original way that you ate, and it's actually not the case. If you end up eating something with the expectation that you're going to continue with the same patterns that you had before, you ended up changing what you're doing, you're going to end up seeing your roles and your health reversing right back to where it was when you started. And so understanding that roadmap, I think, is kind of critical. Nancy, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on Namaste Nutrition today. I would love to have you come back to update us in the future as to how things are moving forward for you. But we are going to have to come to an end to the show. And if you'd like to give everybody your contact information again, it would be great. Go right ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's been a joy to be here. My email is nancymurdoch@live.ca. And my website, my art website, is nancymurdoch.com. And my new website is howdoigetoutofthisrut.com. So it's got some great stuff on it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you coming on.
Very much a pleasure, Claudia.
It's been such a wonderful joy to talk to you, too. And we will talk to you at some point soon. And, you know, it sounds like you have such a very interesting life, and you have some probably wonderful clients. And I hope that if there's anybody out there who is interested in talking to somebody about changing what you're doing and are interested in going up to Canada to visit, go and see Nancy. So this is Namaste Nutrition on www.blogtalkradio.com/GGM. And I am Claudia Cleary, and I would like to thank you so much for joining us today. Namaste.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki-infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.